Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 51. And I'm Michelle Malloy Dillon.
And I'm Janice Cumming. And Michelle, we have a special guest with us today, Krista Slade. Krista has worked in higher ed administration for nearly 30 years, and she has worked in Canada, the UK, and Asia. And currently, she's building a new office for strategic partnerships on behalf of the Dean of the Faculty of Arts and Science at the University of Toronto. So welcome, Krista.
Yes, welcome. We're happy to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah. And so Krista and I, I always feel like I knew you, Krista, because we have some good friends in common. And even when you were in Asia, I remember sort of being at the University of Toronto and hearing about you. But really, I guess I would say in the last 4 or 5 years, we've become closer. David and I have been in and done some work with your team at the Faculty of Arts, and you and I have done some coaching work together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And love working with you, Janice. It's been great. I'm missing David today, but delighted to meet Michelle.
Yeah.
Yes, David's off having fun in New York City. So with his family. So yeah, so we were excited because you actually had been telling me about this amazing leadership adventure that you went on. And then we decided that this would be the perfect thing to have you write a blog and then join us here on the podcast. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what it was that you did?
Well, how I spent my summer vacation. I had the opportunity to be a participant in something called the Canadian Leaders at Sea, which is known as CLASS for short. And it basically allows civilians to join a Canadian Navy ship. So on a warship, they range usually between 3 to 5 days. And I was on a 5-day serial, they call it. And I had the chance to sail from the far north at a place called Iqaluit, which is on Baffin Island, to St. John's, Newfoundland. So it's a very intensive, totally immersive opportunity to learn about how the Navy works, the kind of activities that are happening on board every day. And I guess most importantly, to actually meet the people that work in the Navy, who are the sailors and the officers of the Navy. So it was a phenomenal opportunity.
Yes.
Really loved it.
What an adventure, Krista. That just sounds like something completely out of the box.
What? It absolutely.
Yeah.
At least out of our box.
Out of our box, for sure. Yeah. So yeah. What was intriguing about this for you?
Well, I think it was a combination of, you know, I have no background with the military whatsoever. But like a lot of people, you know, I sort of have watched Hollywood movies or, you know, read quite a bit about the allure of the sea and, you know, the Navy. And so it was a chance to actually see it in person. And also I think to get up to the north of Canada, which is a, you know, a part of the country that really very few people have the chance to visit and to see, you know, kind of see with my own eyes. And frankly, to, you know, have the chance to be out on the water, right? Because I love to sail and I enjoy being out on the ocean, but to actually be on a warship, I mean, I don't know anyone else who's ever had the chance to do that. So a mentor of mine had participated earlier in the year and came back and just, she raved about it and really encouraged me to apply. So I decided to take the plunge.
Yeah.
Yes. So to speak.
Take the plunge. Hopefully you didn't literally take the
plunging.
Plunge.
Hoping I wouldn't be plunging.
But the polar bear was plunging. So before we kind of get into some of the leadership lessons, like there was a few like really key, I think, exciting adventures that happened. So give us a couple of the highlights personally that you experienced.
Well, we were out, it was August, but of course the North is mostly, there really are polar bears. There really are icebergs. You get to see, it's incredibly rugged and beautiful. And I guess it was on the second day as we were sailing down towards Labrador. So we were heading south. We were off an area called, it's a big national park in Canada called the Torngat Mountains. And there was we had seen lots of icebergs and they'd explained to us about what the different, like some of them are bergy bits and they have all these different classifications, but there was quite a large iceberg. And someone had, you know, very high powered I guess I don't know what, like magnifying, you know, binoculars. I guess highly trained. And they said, there's a polar bear out on this iceberg. So we all sort of ran up to the bridge of the ship, and the captain actually detoured a little bit so we could get closer. Mm. And this lone polar bear was sort of, you know, looking and doing a little bit of, I guess he was trying to find some food, right? Because that's how they get their fish.
Yeah.
And then he just dove right in. And, you know, and there's a photo up on the blog post. If people actually click on the photo, yeah, you can see you can see the bear just ready to dive in. So I didn't actually take that photo. I didn't have the skill to take that picture. But we were, and even the sailors were, you know, really impressed that we had that was a really rare opportunity to see that.
Yeah.
I guess another thing that really blew me away is we were, we got a call at about 2 a.m. down in the women's mess. So there were 6 of us sleeping in, they call it a mess. It's, you know, where they have the racks, which are the bunk beds. And we got this call that the Northern Lights were visible and if we wanted to come and see them. So we all jumped out of bed, like all 6 of the women jumped out of bed. And we sort of hauled on our gear and literally went like running up these ladders to the bridge and had the chance to see the Northern Lights. So it was really spectacular. It was incredible. And just that the majesty of the landscape and all the cliches apply. So yes, it was fantastic. Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
What a learning environment for you to be able to learn some key leadership skills in this really beautiful and natural setting. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, the crew, there were about 220 sailors on this ship. So it's, you know, it's a large, I mean, by American standards, it's quite small, because I'm told some of the US ships have like 5,000 men on board, but this one was about 200, maybe 220. But you know, they, all of them had the opportunity to explain what it is that they did. I'm sure they were quite sick of us by the time we got off the ship, because we would be constantly asking them, what is it that you do? How do you do that? How does this work? And they were amazing. Each of them were teaching us what they do, and actually have a lot of pride in what they do. So it was really, I learned from every single person on board. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that struck me that you wrote about was you sort of had, you know, maybe from Hollywood movies, like the command and control style, which you were expecting, and you found something very different. And I think that's really, for our listeners, like, interesting, right? Like, what were the kind of things that surprised you and that you learned about leadership styles for this?
Well, the commanding officer of the ship that I was on, which was the Ville de Quebec, which is Quebec City, all of the Canadian warships are named after capitals of the Canadian provinces. So we were on Ville de Quebec, which is actually the only Francophone ship in the Canadian Navy. So that was also kind of fun. But the commanding officer is from Alberta, didn't grow up near the ocean. Studied engineering, is a huge hockey fan, loves, you know, has like teenagers at home, is a very not at all what I was expecting. Has this incredible gravitas, that's really the best way I could explain it, of Commander Ilhart. He's got a really warm but very powerful presence, and he really leads by example. You know, the way he walks around the ship, he's constantly, connecting with people and finding out what they're doing. He's, you know, really models good behavior by asking the right kind of questions. For example, we had the chance to watch a briefing at 5 o'clock, where the different directors of the different parts of the ship come to provide an update to the captain, right? So, you know, you'd have the boatswain, who's in charge of all the actual equipment that they have on the ship, or the chief petty officer, who's running all of the sort of below decks operations, like the galley and the laundry and that kind of thing. I hope I'm getting this right, but basically all of his functional heads all come in to give a report, and from the bridge, what's happening with the nav, you know, with their, are they on, you know, are they on course, are there any intelligence reports that are coming in that they need to pay attention to. So to sort of watch how he managed that meeting, and just in terms of how he really got exactly the information that he needed, he, you know, he really has a very good way of kind of eliciting from people what he needs to know, and also what they need to be paying attention to. And the interesting thing was that one of the other people on my, you know, one of my other classmates on the trip, he's actually retired now, but at the time he was the CEO of one of the biggest companies in the country. Janice, you'll probably know this, or Canadian listeners will know this, Rogers Media. So it was the CEO of Rogers Media. And, you know, we were standing close to each other when the this briefing was being done. And he said, wow, you know, I'd love to run my meetings like this. Great mix. And what I mean to say is that he, you know, it wasn't all warm and fuzzy. He was obviously, you know, he's literally running a tight ship. Like, it's interesting, all these metaphors that we have around running a tight ship. He's running a tight ship. This is a, you know, this is a serious operation. But he had a great way of balancing, you know, kind of encouragement with getting to the point and getting people to be succinct and everybody knowing what their job was on that ship. And for me, that's what I really, took away. It was that every single person on that ship, from literally, you know, the young woman in the galley who was, you know, preparing meals for, you know, 200 people, to the, you know, the chief radio operator or the intelligence officers, the medic on the ship, everybody knows exactly what their job is and how they contribute to the overall success and, frankly, the survival of the ship.
Right.
If things are, you know, the stakes are pretty high in these situations. So,
You talk in your blog about the distributed leadership model, and sort of I hear that everyone has clarity on their role, right? There's an ultimate clarity on what they're responsible for. And tell me more about how that distributes the leadership on the ship.
Well, it's, I guess, as I said, everyone is responsible for the success and the survival of the ship. And everyone also has multiple roles. So it's not as if you only are responsible for one thing. So on, I think it was maybe day three, they have these drills that they run, and they're surprise drills. Like, they're not warned in advance that this is going to happen. And they have different scenarios that they run through because they have to be ready for anything. And, you know, so this big drill that they had going on, I mean, literally within 6 minutes, every single crew, everybody on the crew has an assigned job, and they have to be ready to go, dressed and at their muster point within 6 minutes. And so I wrote in the blog about I was in the dining room or the dining hall where the officers eat. And I had never, of course, looked closely, but everything has multiple purposes. So when this drill happened, within 6 minutes, like, it was amazing to see how everybody broke into action. And literally, this dining room turned into an operating theater.
Wow.
And, you know, the dining room table becomes a surgery. They have, the lights can switch around to be, you know, it was just amazing to see how they all worked together. And it was, to me, it looked pretty seamless. Like, they were all working and running and, you know, safely getting to where they had to be and ready, like, to spring into action. And those things can happen, I guess, anytime.
Sure.
That was sort of a dramatic example.
It reminds me, you know, like, you know this, Krista, like, a lot of the work we do here at Fundraising Leadership is about this, like, creating a culture of accountability, you know, and everybody, like, really having, like, a clear sense of what they're accountable for and to be empowered, you know. I mean, a big point of that is to have people be empowered. And I really loved when you were saying, like, you know, you list in the blog sort of what they're looking for, the leadership requirements, so people can go there to read them. But I love that the commander added, like, reliability, you know. I mean, not the sexiest thing, but, like, hey, is it important, right, within organizations? And I think, like, you know, our listeners mostly work in nonprofit organizations, and how much better could they be if we had more reliability?
Well, I agree. And, you know, it kind of caught me by surprise because, of course, most times when you talk to people about leadership and developing, you know, capacity and that sort of thing, often we're talking about things like, you know, strategic capability or how innovative, creative, resilient, like there's so many. And I mean, those are all important too, obviously. But he just said, you know what, there's a lot to be said for actually being able to rely on people, like show up, do what you say you're going to do. You know, I can't really emphasize enough how much of a premium I put on people being reliable and showing up. Like this is kind of the fundamentals, but that was a kind of a healthy reminder for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and the other thing I wanted to mention is they also are kind of, they're ready for anything and they pride themselves on this, right? But when we were getting ready to go out to the ship from Iqaluit at the beginning, one of the things we had to do is we actually had to leave because the ship is too big to actually come in to Iqaluit. So we had to go out in a Zodiac boat, you know, these little inflatable boats, right? So I'm heading out of my little Zodiac with all the Navy divers, these fucking men.
I picture you, Krista, like on the bow of the boat, you know, as the waves are crashing over you.
Terrified about how I'm going to get from the Zodiac up to the ship, thinking like, oh my God, they're going to have to send a crane to hoist me up onto this ship. But, you know, as we were, so we're waiting down at the beach for the, you know, for these little boat, this little boat to literally arrive to ferry us out to the ship. And the lieutenant commander who was looking after us in Iqaluit, the way he even parked his car, like they had, you know, it was like he had very deliberately parked in a certain way. So if they had to get out in a hurry, they could get out. He said, oh, that's, and I was like, wow, this is aggressive, you know, like ready, I ready. Like they are always anticipating, what do you need to do next? How do you make sure that you're not caught in a situation you don't want to be caught in? Like this operational readiness, I guess, is something that they really excel at. So I guess the reliability and just sort of being ready for anything, those are the two big takeaways for me.
Oh, I love how you had so many examples of how you saw that on this adventure. And it makes me curious, like, what have you, you know, what has shifted for you in terms of your leadership since this experience?
Well, I mean, I came back very energized by it. And I would say too, I've spoken to others who did the course and our experience was really universal. So that's, you know, that kind of boost in confidence, I think, was really very welcome and kind of came at the right time because I've started a new role. I'm doing a new job. I'm building a new team. So I think, you know, for me, it's really more about my approach and my attitude rather than a specific skill that I picked up. But I realized, I think from being on this ship that, you know, you can try things. You don't necessarily have to say you're going to do them for the rest of your life. I mean, I am never again going to, I hope to God, never have to like fire a semi-automatic weapon again. Like I did on this ship. I mean, you know, God help us. But you know, but you can try something and you can get a little bit outside your comfort zone and you learn from it. And it's, I think it gives you confidence to try new things and to maybe do things a little bit differently. Even if you don't necessarily, you know, need to master that skill, you can try it.
Yeah.
And there's value to that.
That whole new perspective by really pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, that when you come back to work, you're not, I would imagine, you're not quite as worried or afraid to take some things that you felt were risky prior to that, to try something new.
Yeah. And that your teammates also have your back.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I think that's another thing within, and of course, I only had this tiniest sliver of experience with the Navy compared to, you know, the men and women who served for years. But, you know, they have a very strong bond with one another because they all have each other's back. And I think that's something we all need to cultivate in our relationship, you know, relationships at home, but also obviously in the office and with our, in our community. So that was actually very powerful for me.
Yeah. And as you know, we like to give people something to try here on the podcast so they can kind of bring this to life for themselves. So what is it that you, you know, we were kind of joking before we started recording, like not everyone's going to get to go and do this. You know, this is a special thing that you were lucky enough to do. But what would you like to give people to try who are listening to?
Well, I would say try something you keep saying outside your comfort zone. Try something that maybe sparks a bit of fear, a little, like I think actually being brave is a good thing, because as you build that bravery and courage, I think it actually has all kinds of spin-off benefits for you. So try something that intrigues you, but maybe scares you just a little bit. And by happy coincidence today, I have started ukulele lessons with some of my colleagues. And I literally
she has her ukulele with her. Bright yellow ukulele.
It's like the Fisher Price Mattel ukulele. But you know, there's a group of us that work together from different areas here at the faculty, and we're doing, you know, 6 lessons in how to play the ukulele. Now I have zero musical ability. Hopefully will not have to make my living playing the ukulele, but it's just something kind of fun and different, and I'm just prepared to try it. I'm not going to master it, but I'm prepared to try it. So I would say, you know, find something that sparks your interest, that maybe, you know, is different from what you've done before. And, you know, experiential learning is kind of all the rage, I think, and a lot of, especially in our environment here at the university, it's a big thing that we encourage our students to do. But I think it's a great thing for, you know, people that are working like for faculty, yeah, staff and others, to just experience it and just,
yes,
try it a little, something a little different.
Yeah, I love that, because there's such excitement about you talking about this experience where you're really diving into a whole new world. And also with the ukulele lessons, right? It's like, I don't even know how to hold this ukulele yet, but I'm gonna figure it out, and it'll be fun. We'll see what I learn. And there's such value to getting out of your comfort zone and just trying things that you're not yet even good at. And I know that's a lot of what we really strive for in our work at Fundraising Leadership too.
Well, Krista knows that, because David and I, yes, had her team do some pretty crazy things.
Oh, we did.
Years of experiential learning, and we won't say any more than that.
No. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. There you go.
lots of play and fun learning. So yeah.
And actually, the importance of play. I mean, that's the other thing. I know, you know, like sometimes it's just a good thing to have fun. Like, just do something different and keep it fun.
Get that bright yellow ukulele out. So, well, before we wrap up, Krista, it's always a delight. You know, I love talking with you and seeing you, and I'm going to come visit you at your new office, because it looks really cool. And maybe you'll play me a song on your ukulele.
You've been warned, Janice. You've been warned.
But we will link to the great post, and the pictures are fantastic. We've got a few pictures, including a really cute selfie of Krista with the ocean behind her. And also we link to your LinkedIn, Krista, so in case people want to reach out to you and find out more about this program. So thank you for, I mean, this is so, I'm so excited. Like, this has just been so fun to hear about this. I'm not sure I want to go, but I'm excited to talk about it with you.
Well, we'd like to invite our listeners, as well as you, Janice, to go outside and do something out of your comfort zone. It may not be a ship, but really, like, you know, push yourself to try something new and to have fun and to bring in that childlike exploration, you know, back into things. And there's a lot to learn there. Yeah. Yeah. So please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Now go put it into practice. Yeah.